Hi friends, welcome to a new format of the lectures. So today I'm going to start my first podcast. A lot of people have been asking me to also start a podcast with respect to my lectures, and it is a very interesting way to try and find out audiences at places where the signal of your cell phone is not very, very high, and there are restricted access to high throughput and high megabyte downloads. So there are speed restrictions. So I'm trying out this new format today. So today I'm going to talk about the identification of distinctive features and how they are very crucial parts of our understanding of syllable structure. Now, a syllable is aligned with the distinctive features as sections of simultaneous bundles that are called phonemes. The phonemes themselves being concatenated into sequences, that means they are linearly ordered in a particular sequence of elements, and the elementary pattern underlying any group of phonemes or a particular set or grouping of phonemes is what the syllable is. Now, the first person to draw attention to such a phonemic syllable was Polyanov. And he tried to formulate the basic terminology of syllabeme, or the basic constructive cell in the speech sequence. He and Ivanov produced some brilliant research in this regard. Now, the phonemic structure, according to them, is contained within the syllable and is determined by a set of rules and sequences as based on the regular reoccurrence of the constructive model. A free form of a sequence or separable by means of pauses must contain an integral number of syllables. Obviously, the number of different syllables in a language in a submultiple, as Jakobson and Halle have talked about, they are obviously fixed. So depending on the number of fixed number of syllables, some multiples of these numbers, all the other words and the phonological words are prepared, but they form the basis of what is also known as a distinctive feature, which is a submultiple of the number of phonemes. Now, we use this principle of syllable structure with the respect to the contrast of successive features within the syllable. One part of the syllable stands out from the others and is mainly a kind of a contrast vowel versus consonant, which is used to render one part of the syllable more prominent than the rest of it. Now, there are languages where every syllable consists of consonant and a succeeding vowel, or a preceding vowel and a consonant. In such, it is possible that any point of the sequence to predict the class of phonemes that is going to be followed. Now, this can be the basis of classification of phonemes, classification of syllables, different types of syllables, different kinds of syllables. So in a language which has a greater variety of syllable type, the reoccurrence of a phonemic class presents different degrees of probability. And in addition to this kind of a scheme, there are other consonant vowel and vowel consonant patterns. We also have consonant vowel consonant or a singular vowel as part of a syllable, or the different kinds of syllables that are there. Now, In contrast to this, the pure consonant can never be a syllable. That means the vowel part, the V part, can neither be omitted nor figure twice in a syllable. Now the contrast vowel consonant is therefore either unique or merely predominant. It can be used intermittently and substituted by other cognate contrasts. Both the consonant and the vowel parts may contain more than one syllable, one phoneme. The phoneme constituting parts, vowels and consonants of the syllable, are termed as crest phonemes and slope phonemes respectively. If the crest contains two or more phonemes, one of them is termed as a peak phoneme of the syllable or the syllabic phoneme and is raised over the others by a contrast compact versus diffuse or a vowel versus sonorant. The motor cortex correlates of this kind of a determination of the phonemic syllable has been described quite adequately by Stetson almost 7 decades back. 70 years have passed, and they have not changed. So the description that Stetson gives is the motor correlate of the phonemic syllable is a puff of air forced upward through the vocal channel by a compression of the intercostal muscles. Therefore, according to this description, every syllable invariably consists of three successive factors: the release, the culmination, and the arrest of the pulse. The middle one of these phases is the nuclear factor of the syllable, the core factor of the syllable, while the other two are marginal. The marginal factors, which are termed as initiation and termination, are affected either by the mere action of the chest muscles or by speech sounds. Usually they are consonants. In both marginal factors, these chest muscles play a major role. Now, if both marginal factors are affected by the action of the chest muscles alone, the nuclear phase of the syllable is the only audible one. However, if there is a release or the arrest of the speech sounds, the nuclear phase of the syllable is most audible. So audibility becomes a factor which translates the motor correlate into an audible correlate. So you have the articulatory space or the articulatory universe giving rise to certain set of features or in the articulatory space, which is converted into the auditory space by the definition of the syllable, of the motor syllable. In other words, the nuclear part of the syllable is definitely in contrast to its marginal parts, the initiation and the termination parts. In the acoustic aspect, the crest usually exceeds the slopes in the intensity and in many instances show a higher fundamental frequency. Perceptually, therefore, the crest is distinguished from the slopes by a greater loudness, which often is accompanied by a raised voice pitch. As a rule, therefore, the crest phonemes are inherently louder than the slope phonemes of the same syllable. Ordinarily, the crest is formed by vowels, while the slopes contain the other phonemes. Less frequently, the contrast of crest and slope phonemes is displayed by the liquids versus pure consonants, or by nasals versus oral consonants, and in exceptional cases, by constrictives versus stops. If a slope is constituted by a whole cluster, if and within a cluster there is an inherently louder phoneme, in less loud surroundings, its loudness is noticeably reduced to preserve the unity of the syllable. This gives rise to the factor that there are two kinds of distinctive features that may be possible. Jacobson and Hull in 1956 in their Fundamentals discuss these distinctive features of the two kinds and classify them as prosodic and inherent. A prosodic feature is displayed only by those phonemes which form the crest of the syllable, and it may be defined only with reference to the relief of the syllable or of the syllable chain, whereas the inherent feature is displayed by phonemes irrespective of their role in the relief of the syllable, and definition of such a feature does not refer to the relief of the syllable or of the syllable chain. Now, this description comes from Jacobson Hall's book Fundamentals of Language, and therefore is an authentic description of the two kinds of distinctive features. Now, if you want to classify the prosodic features, there are three types, which was first described by Henry Sweet, and he talked about the tone, the force, and the quantity, which correspond to the three attributes of sensation: voice pitch, voice loudness, and subjective duration, respectively. The dimensions of frequency, intensity, and time are their closest physical correlates. Each of these three subclasses of prosodic features presents two varieties according to the frame of reference. A prosodic feature may be either intersyllabic or intrasyllabic. In the first case, in the intersyllabic part, the crest of one syllable is compared with the crests of other syllables within the same sequence. In the second or the intrasyllabic case, an instant pertaining to the crest may be compared with other instants of the same crest or with a subsequent slope. A third type of feature is the tone feature. In the intersyllabic variety that we described a little earlier, the tone features are level features, where the different syllable crests within a sequence are contrasted by their register, higher or lower. The level feature may be split into two, either a neutral register, which is contrasted with an elevated register, on the other hand, and with a lowered one on the other, finally, each of which these two registers, high and low, may appear in the two varieties, raised and diminished. The intrasyllabic variety of tone features, which is also known as the modulation feature, contrasts with the higher register of one portion of a phoneme with a lower register of another portion of the same phoneme, or the higher register of one component of a diphthong with the lower register of its other components of the syllable. A third kind of feature are the force features. It comes from the intersyllabic variety of the force features. The stress feature, which is a contrast of a louder stressed crest to the less loud unstressed crests of other syllables within the same sequence. A difference that is produced by the sublaryngeal mechanism, in particular by the abdominal diaphragm movements, which was first pointed out by Stetson and Severs. In the intrasyllabic variety of stress features, two contiguous fractions, that means two sections which are placed one after the other, they are juxtaposed together. The stressed phonemes are compared with each other. According to Smith's analysis, the decline of the amplitude, often accompanied by the decrease of the fundamental frequency, is due to abruptly decreasing the innervation of the expiratory muscles. And so on, there is a distinct possibility that all these features have a kind of correlate in the articulatory domain as well. Similarly, quantity features are present in the intersyllabic variety, which are the length features, which contrasts a normal, short, unstretched syllable within the crest of the syllable, or rather, I would say the normal, short, unstretched phoneme within the crest of the syllable with the long, sustained phonemes of the other phonemes in the same sequence. And a normal short versus steady phoneme with a punctual reduced transient one. A second variety is the contact feature, which is based on the different distribution of duration between the vowel and the subsequent consonant. And then there is an interconnection between the stress and the length. Wherever there is a contrast of the stressed versus unstressed syllables, stress is always used as a configurative, namely culminative feature, whereas length never assumes this function. So more important is the stressed part, where the loudness plays a major role in the contrast. Now, if you compare the prosodic and inherent features, any prosodic feature is based primarily on the contrast between two variables within one and the same time sequence. That is, the relative voice pitch, voice loudness, or duration of a given fraction is determined with respect to the preceding or succeeding fractions, or preceding and succeeding fractions. Now, there are major instances of why this contrasting juxtaposition within one message is used as a kind of a general law for phonemic patterning. The comparative description of the phonemic system of diverse languages, and therefore their confrontation with other orders of phonemic acquisitions by infants who are learning to speak, as well as with the gradual dismantling of language and of its phonemic pattern in aphasia, gives us an important insight into the interrelation and classification of the distinctive features. Now, there are restrictions of overall inventory of distinctive features as well. The progressing phonemic investigation of infants and people who suffer from aphasia, along with the ever-increasing number of phonemic laws that are being detected, foregrounds the problem of the universal rules that underlie phonemic patterning of the languages. In view of these laws of implications of and stratification, the phonemic typology of languages is very, very much becoming a more feasible and urgent way in which we can distinguish between various language systems or phonological systems of the world. Thus, no language simultaneously displays two autonomous consonantal oppositions like pharyngealized and non-pharyngealized, or rounded versus unrounded systems. These lead to certain invariances within the phonemic pattern of one language and must be supplemented by a search for universal invariances in the phonemic patterning of language. This brings us to the end of the first podcast, in which we have seen how the fundamentals of syllabic structure is used to determine the structure of language itself as a case in point of the system of systems mechanism. We identify the distinctive features as aligned in terms of the simultaneous bundles called phonemes, and then they form the basis of the syllable. And the structure that is inherent within this patterning then leads us to a kind of generalization, where syllabic structure gives rise to the pronunciation patterns and how morphophonemic rules will be involved.